Emirati officials confirmed that airstrikes hit targets in the capital Abu Dhabi after the Yemeni army launched an operation deep inside the Persian Gulf country. Israeli forces shoot and kill a Palestinian man at a checkpoint near the occupied West Bank city of Tulkarm. And Iran rejects the U.S. top diplomat's comments about the ongoing talks to revive the JCPOA, saying the deadlines announced by Washington are fabricated. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. The Yemeni army says it has launched an operation deep inside the United Arab Emirates. The announcement comes after the UAE reported two fire incidents in the capital Abu Dhabi. Officials said three fuel tankers exploded near the storage facilities of oil firm ANDOC, killing three people and wounding six. There was also a fire at the construction site at Abu Dhabi International Airport. The Emirates said initial investigations show that the fires were possibly caused by drones. The Yemeni military conducts regular retaliatory attacks on Saudi Arabia over its aggression against Yemen. But attacks against the UAE, which is fighting alongside Saudis, have been rare. This comes days after UAE-backed mercenaries joined a key battle in Yemen's Ma'rib. Earlier, activist and political commentator Hossein Al-Bukhaiti joined us from the Yemeni capital Sana'a to give us the latest information about the Yemeni army's attack against several sites in the UAE. Let's take a listen.
Today's attack was new about it, that the United Arab Emirates actually has admitted this attack in the first minute after Yemeni army has conducted this attack. And we can see that Yemeni army has warned, and some officials here in Sana'a has warned in the last 3 days, United Arab Emirates, if it's not going to stop its attack against Yemen, because they have actually resumed their airstrike against Yemeni civilians, especially in Shabwa region. And as well yesterday, they have targeted Damar city, the targeting some mobile station on some mountains in Damar city, central Yemen. But at the end, they haven't actually respected the warning from Yemen that United Arab Emirates will become a target. And we're going to see that from the announcement from United Arab Emirates that was released a minute ago, they have said that three fuel tankers were set on fire because what they say of a suspect drone near ADNOC oil firm. And as well, they have announced that the other attack was in a construction site in Abu Dhabi Airport. This actually means that this attack is just a message to United Arab Emirates, because Yemeni forces could actually have targeted the oil firm itself. They could have targeted the oil refinery in that area, and as well they could have targeted United Arab Emirates Abu Dhabi Airport, not only the construction site. But I believe they still try to give United Arab Emirates a message to stop their attack. If they don't stop their attack against Yemen, if they are not going to support their mercenary in Yemen, if they are not going to withdraw all their forces and stop supporting any forces loyal to them, I believe that the coming attack, it will come directly on Abu Dhabi Airport, and it will come directly in United Arab Emirates oil refinery, either in the sea or in Abu Dhabi and the surrounding area of Abu Dhabi.
Israeli forces shoot and kill yet another Palestinian man over alleged slamming attack in the occupied West Bank. The video captured by a witness shows a Palestinian man lying on the ground near the bus stop after being shot. Three Israeli soldiers are seen approaching the man while pointing their guns at him. Palestinian media have identified the victim as Faleh Musa Shakir Jaradat from a village near the city of Al-Khalil. The Israeli military claims a man emerged from a car and tried to stab one of the soldiers. They say they are still looking for the car. Israeli forces have a long history of killing Palestinians, citing different pretexts. Now, in this edition of the News Review, another day of Israeli atrocities in occupied Al-Quds. A Palestinian man threatens to self-immolate as the regime's forces try to evict his family from their ancestral home. Footage shows Mohammed Asaya and several residents of the house standing on the rooftop carrying a gas canister and other flammable materials. Israeli forces went to the home located in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood early on Monday to carry an eviction order. Saya's family, made up of 15 people, that is, including children, have been living there since the 1950s. They have been facing an eviction threat since 2017. They are among several Palestinian families in Sheikh Jarrah facing forced evictions. Palestinians see the move as part of Israel's land grab policy to expand its settlements and change the demographic character of Al-Quds. To discuss that further, we're joined by our correspondent Mona Kandel, live from Ramallah, and also Zakaria Odeh, a Sheikh Jarrah resident and the coordinator for the Civic Coalition for Palestinian Rights in Jerusalem. Now, let's begin with our correspondent to get an update on the situation before I ask you further questions. Mona, if you could tell us more about what happened. It seems that once again we're facing some technical difficulties trying to reach our correspondent in Ramallah. So let's move on to Mr. Zakaria Odeh, who is a Sheikh Jarrah resident and the coordinator for the Civic Coalition for Palestinian Rights in Jerusalem. If you could please tell us, the forceful expulsion by Israel of Palestinians from their homes in Sheikh Jarrah and those neighborhoods, how bad is the situation? Tell us more about the situation there.
Yes, you know what happened today, that the police and Israeli police, Israeli special forces, they start evicting a family of Mahmoud Al-Salhi, a family of 15 people who had been living there for several decades. And today they were trying to evict the family because the Israeli government in 1968, they have confiscated the land there for what they call it under the Israeli occupation law, the public purpose, and now they are trying to build in the area, so they want to evict the family. So they came today at 7 o'clock and they tried to evict the family, but the owner of the house, he put his family on the roof of the house with gas canister around him, threatening that if the police will evict them, they will burn themselves. So what they did today till now, they have already destroyed a nursery of plants and they have evicted a car exhibition in the area. So this case is not the only case. I mean, this is only a case for what's happened every day in Jerusalem. You know, we know, especially in Sheikh Jarrah, we know that part of Sheikh Jarrah, Carmel Jauni, there are nearly 50 families that there is a home eviction against them. They want to build a settlement, and there is the eastern, what they call the western part of Sheikh Jarrah, which there has been several Israeli court cases in order to evict them. So Sheikh Jarrah has been really targeted by the Israeli settler activity, by the Israeli government. Not only Sheikh Jarrah, several neighborhoods, Silwan, Al-Bustan, Batn al-Hawa, Al-Aisawiyah. So there is a daily Israeli policy which has been going on for more than 45 years of occupation.
Exactly. I'm sorry to cut you off, Mr. Ode, but since you mentioned those neighborhoods in Sheikh Jarrah, and I would like to also point to the historical significance of this geographical region, and this seems to be in line with Israel's policy to Judaize occupied Jerusalem.
Yes, this is the part of the Israeli continuous Judaizing of Jerusalem. It's really part of the Israeli forced displacement policy and ethnic cleansing that has been going on not only for 45 years but even more than 73 years. Is Sheikh Jarrah is a strategic area. What they are trying to plan settlement, they are trying to expand the settlement there to connect what was with Jerusalem, with Sheikh Jarrah, with the settlements in Sheikh Jarrah, and with the Hebrew University in the east. So this is the plan where they disconnect Jerusalem, the old city from the northern part of Jerusalem. So this is the strategic plan that the Israeli government, the Israeli institution, and the settler movement are trying to achieve in the city of Jerusalem.
Thank you very much. That was Mr. Zakaria Oda, a Sheikh Jarrah resident and the coordinator for the Civic Coalition for Palestinian Rights in Jerusalem. And that brings us to the end of this edition of the News Review. Thank you for following us. Welcome back. The United States has warned that time is running out for Iran to revive the 2015 agreement. Now, Iran's foreign ministry says the deadlines announced by Washington are all fabricated.
Regarding some fabricated deadlines, I have to tell you that the current U.S. president, his foreign policy team, his negotiators in Vienna know that if JCPOA is alive today, that's because of the Islamic Republic of Iran, not the U.S.
Speaking of the U.S. adopting a Plan B in case the talks fail, Hatib Zadeh urged Washington to focus on Plan A and speed up their efforts to salvage the JCPOA. The spokesman said what has remained is crucial matters and special political decisions that the United States has to make. He said that should this happen, the sides will be moving a step towards sustainable agreement. The comments come as the eighth round of negotiations aimed at reviving the accord are underway in the Austrian capital, Vienna. The head of the Iranian delegation, Ali Bahadikani, and other parties to the deal are now back to the negotiating table after consultations with their capitals to discuss the related issues. Lebanon dismisses as totally and completely untrue reports by Israeli media that it plans to buy gas from the regime under a U.S. brokered deal. The Lebanese Ministry of Energy and Water says Beirut and Cairo are working on a gas supply agreement to help alleviate Lebanon's electricity shortage. It says that the agreement clearly specifies that the gas must come from Egypt. An Israeli media outlet claimed last week that Tel Aviv would provide gas to Lebanon under a U.S. brokered agreement. It also said the deal was aimed at providing Lebanon with an alternative to Iran, which has sent several fuel shipments to Lebanon late last year. The report is itself in question, as Lebanon does not recognize Israel and has no diplomatic or financial ties with the regime. The U.S. has also denied the report. Lebanon is grappling with round-the-clock power cuts due to a deepening financial crisis. For more on that, we're joined by our correspondent, Mariam Saleh, live from Beirut. Mariam, tell us more. This seems to be quite interesting. Lebanon buying fuel from Israel. Where does that come from?
Well, that's definitely against the law here in Lebanon. That, of course, this is just part of the propaganda that the Israelis are used to. They say they got their information from the special coordinator for the U.S., whom is considered perhaps someone who is Israeli and American at the same time. He himself was trying to broker talks between Lebanon, indirect talks, of course, between Lebanon and Israel concerning the demarcation of the maritime borders here in Lebanon that led to a lot of controversy because he was considered someone who would look into the interests of the Israelis more than the Americans, of course, in addition to the fact that the U.S. is being questioned on this deal that they are trying to broker. Now, we do have, of course, confirmation, in addition to the denial, the fact that the Minister of Energy and Water himself that said that it is that they specifically conditioned that there would not be any gas coming in from the Israeli regime, but at the same time they are working towards this deal, which is taking months. And this deal, what interesting about it is that it came directly, was declared by the U.S. ambassador Dorothy Shea here in Lebanon right after Hezbollah, through its Secretary General, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, declared that fuel shipments have left the ports of Iran. And that was what led to many people to question that this so-called initiative by the United States, saying that this is just trying to pave off what they see as clear Iranian support for the Lebanese people. Now, this deal would, of course, have its benefits because in some way or the other, it forced the U.S. into a corner, making exceptions to the Caesar Act. Lebanon is dealing directly with the Syrians. Syrians are also dealing with Jordan and Egypt and the Egyptians as well. We had several meetings for the four countries, and this is the first time we see these meetings since the beginning of the war on Syria. So that was something that believe is the result of Hezbollah's initiative that made the U.S. go for this sort of call to try to make these exceptions in order to bring in electricity. So,
thank you very much. Our correspondent, Maram Saleh, live from Beirut. Moving on, the Chinese president warns against any confrontation between major world powers, saying they would not solve any problems.
Our world today is far from being tranquil. Rhetoric that stokes hatred and prejudice abounds. Acts of containment, suppression, or confrontation arising thereof do all harm, not the least good, to world peace and security. History has proved time and again that confrontation does not solve problems. It only invites catastrophic consequences. Protectionism and unilateralism can protect no one. They ultimately hurt the interests of others as well as one's own.
Xi Jinping made the remarks while addressing the virtual Davos World Economic Forum. He said countries must abandon Cold War mentality and seek peaceful coexistence and win-win outcomes. The Chinese leader once again urged the nations to choose dialogue over confrontation, warning against all forms of unilateralism, protectionism, as well as hegemony. Xi's comments come at a time of simmering tensions between China and the U.S. over a host of issues, including Taiwan. Beijing is angry over Washington's diplomatic contacts and arms sales to the island, which China claims its own under the One China policy. And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Close up, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company.
I
am now in one of the crowded places of Tehran, Shush Square. Tehran is a modern city, though we have to remember the fact that this city has been recognized as the capital of Iran since Qajarid era. Therefore, it's almost old. So, there are many buildings and old monuments in this city. Today, we are going to visit one of the old places of Tehran, Khanat Caravansaray. Khanat Caravansaray is the biggest in-town caravansaray of Tehran. To define simply, caravansaray is a building that used to accommodate a caravan. These caravans include different goods and quadruped animals, which traveled from one city to another, so they needed a place for rest. A caravansaray has usually a big square or rectangular yard, as well as a tall, big entrance. Constructing caravansaray started booming in Safavid era. It was during this period that Shah Abbas I decided to reconstruct the Silk Road, and for doing so, he started building and repairing several caravansarays. Khanat Caravansaray was built at the end of Nasiruddin Shah Qajar dynasty. The area of Khanat Caravansaray in Tehran is about 10,500 square meters. This caravansaray has 70 chambers inside the yard, as well as four small markets behind these chambers. The height of Khanat Caravansaray's gate is 6 meters. It's made of Russian wood and has 40 studs on it. I am now near Khanat Caravansaray. This caravansaray was initially located in the suburb of Tehran, but after Tehran got extended, this caravansaray came to be inside the city. Let's go inside the caravansaray and see what's going on there. Oh my God, what a big, beautiful yard. It reminds me of Naqsh-e-Jahan Square in Isfahan. Though it's not that big, but it's as beautiful as it. Four turquoise-colored pools are situated in this yard in a symmetrical way, and the chambers are circling around this big yard. In front of each chamber, there is a small balcony which has a vault-like ceiling. The ceilings, which are made of bricks, are very beautiful. The architecture of this caravansaray is brickwork. This caravansaray has still kept its use. However, its today's use has nothing to do with its use in the past. Of course, there is no caravan or quadruped animal, but there are people who are busy buying goods, especially nuts and dried fruits, in the chambers of this caravansarai. Oh, look, there is a traditional restaurant with a great atmosphere here. People come here to eat and, of course, take a tour around the caravansarai. The smell of food is great. I may go to the restaurant to have lunch. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagin.
A few minutes I would like to spend in understanding some of the points in Surah Hud, as one of the chapters that contains a number, the stories of a number of our prophets. The particular one I selected was what's related to Prophet Shu'aib. I don't want to, there's a lot to say. I don't want to get to the specific problem besides their disbelief in God, at least to a degree where they would be willing to give in to his messenger. Here, their sin had to do with business, and when they were selling a product, what they gave, they undermeasured, so they gave less, and what they received, they made sure it was the right amount. Prophet Shu'aib talked to them about this, and this was a problem. Ya qawm, awful al-mikyal. If you're doing business, whatever measurement you're supposed to give, then give that amount. Then he advises them, says, Ya qawm, la yajrimannakum shiqaqi an yusibakum mithlu ma asaba qawma nuhin aw qawma hudin aw qawma salih. If you are irritated by what I'm saying, because it's coming from me, you can't take it coming from me. And this causes you to develop this enmity and animosity and antagonism against me. So this problem you have with me personally, don't let that get you to do wrong. لَا يَجْرِمَنَّكُمْ شِقَاقِي. And that wrong that you do will end up causing you what happened to the people of Nuh and the people of Hud and the people of Salih and the people of Lut. وَمَا قَوْمُ لُوتٍ مِنْكُمْ بِبَعِيدٍ. You know the people of Lut. Again, if you remember, if you do the geography of Prophet Ibrahim, left with Lut, he was one of his followers from Iraq, from Babylon to Palestine. Prophet Ibrahim is buried there, Palestine. The city known as Al-Khalil is where the Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam, is buried. So he lived there and he passed away there. Lut went over there with him, and he was told to go and advise a people nearby, one of the tribes, nations that was close to where Ibrahim was, is where Lut went to advise them, to help them, to reform them, to correct this wrongdoing of theirs, and they didn't listen and they were destroyed. If you look on the map, obviously, that is very close to where we said Madian is. So he says, وَمَا قَوْمُ لُوتٍ مِنْكُمْ بِبَعِيدٍ. People of Lut, they are not far away from you. You have an issue with me, don't let that cause this to happen to you. Look at yourself, think of yourself, think of your own future. I'm worried about you. وَاسْتَغْفِرُوا رَبَّكُمْ ثُمَّ تُوبُوا إِلَيْهِ إِنَّ رَبِّي رَحِيمٌ وَدُودٌ. Ask God for forgiveness and turn back to Him. My Lord is very merciful and wadood. This term that's used here, this attribute is very nice. Wadood is very loving. See, someone that shows a lot of love. He's very loving. He's telling these sinners that are not listening, he says, look, ask forgiveness, turn back to God. He is very merciful, he's very loving. قَالُوا يَا شُعَيْبُ. The response, I'm reading and giving you a rough translation to get an idea of what's being said here, because roughly the entirety of the story, it bears a lot of fruits when we, even though, you know, without getting to those intricate details that some of these words and phrases have, just having that the gist of the story with somewhat detail that we're trying to present is very helpful in learning. They said, they responded to their Prophet, يَا شُعَيْبْ مَا نَفْقَهُ كَثِيرًا مِمَّا تَقُولُ. They said, we don't understand a lot of the things that you're saying. What the heck are you talking about, in other words? You don't understand what you're talking about. وَإِنَّا لَنَرَاكَ فِينَا ضَعِيفًا وَلَوْ لَا رَهْتُكَ لَرَجَمْنَاكَ. Look at this. So, the tone changes. Prior to that, like, what's your business telling us? Is it your prayer that is telling you to do this, that, the other? He responds and then he warns them. He says, look, you have an issue with me? Don't let that cause you to end up the way the people of Nuh, the people of Hud, the people of Salih, the people of Lut that are close by. This last one, that can happen to you. They change their tone. He said, look, we don't understand what you're saying. And in our eyes, you're weak. In what sense? وَلَوْ لَا رَحْتُكَ لَرَجَمْنَاكَ. If it wasn't your tribe, your clan, the people that are around you, we would have stoned you, لَرَجَمْنَاكَ. Would have killed you, in other words. وَمَا أَنْتَ عَلَيْنَا بِعَزِيزٍ. Look, what are you trying to do? Force us or get us to change our ways? We don't want to do that. We're going to get you in trouble. Threatening him. This language tone changes and they start threatening the Prophet. The Prophet responds, he said, my trust is in Allah, I'm just doing what he told me. He says, he responds to them, he says, قَالْ يَا قَوْمْ أَرَهْطِي أَعَزُّ عَلَيْكُمْ مِنَ اللَّهِ. He said, because of my clan, these few people, you're not going to kill me? And be careful, you're telling me to be careful. If it wasn't for them, you would kill me? You're afraid of them because of your fear of these people, these few? Are they more capable than Allah? وَاتَّخَذْتُمُوهُ وَرَاءَكُمْ ظِهْرِيًّا. You've put God behind you? You're not looking at him, you're not recognizing him, you're not seeing him, you're not seeing his ability, his authority, his power, that the power of this clan is nothing compared to. You consider these people capable in God that you've put them behind you, you're not. إِنَّ رَبِّي بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ مُحِيطٌ. God encompasses what you're doing. Everything around you, if you're going to be throwing stones at me to stone me to death, everything in that scenario is under God's control. That's ihata. I use the word encompass because it sort of means that. I can't think of a better word. But what it implies or what it suggests is that he's fully in charge of all of that. And then he says, don't threaten me. اعملوا على مكانتكم إني عامل. You do what you think is right. I'm going to do my thing. فسوف تعلمون. You will in the future come to know. من يأتيه بعذاب يخزي. You're threatening me that this hard death is going to come my way. You will see. You will. سوف means not right now, not in the near future. سوف. In the future, you'll see who will be punished if you don't change your ways. وَمَنْ هُوَ كَاذِبْ. And you will see who's lying. وَارْتَقِبُوا إِنِّي مَعَكُمْ رَقِيبٌ. You watch, and I'm watching with you. Let's see who's got the last laugh. Let's see who will come out of this alive. They threatened. He said, I'm doing my thing. You guys do whatever you want. Plot, try to kill, whatever you want. I'm not going to stop this. I'm going to continue. You guys do whatever you want. And what does God say? God ends the story. This is very brief. It didn't happen in these few minutes. You know, these are years, decades perhaps. I don't know exactly how long this took. وَلَمَّا جَاءَ أَمْرُنَا. Our command came. And two things happened when the command came. نَجَّيْنَا شُعَيْبًا وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا مَعَهُ بِرَحْمَةٍ مِنَّا. With a mercy from us, we saved Shu'aib and the people who believed with him. وَأَخَذَتِ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا الصَّيْحَةِ. The sayha, this loud sound of some form, maybe thunder, it took them. أخذت الذين ظلموا الصيحة فأصبحوا في دارهم جاثمين. They were lying around all dead bodies. كأن لم يغنوا فيها. As though they were never a wealthy people here. They had an abundance of wealth. They were very prosperous materially. Now the ruins that remain of that city of Median, as though nobody lived here with any prosperity. It's just ruins. كَأَلَّمْ يَغْنَوْ فِيهَ. So nobody has ever been here. أَلَا بُعْدًا لِمَدْيَنَ كَمَا بَعْدَتْ ثَمُودِ. Far be the people of Median as the people of Thamud, or the tribe, the nation Thamud was.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. يا
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Thank you.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. According to the Department of Health and Human Services, hospitals in nearly half of U.S. states are nearing capacity, as the Omicron variant has triggered a record number of cases across the country. We now present you an article written by Eric Berger. The piece is titled, "Is the U.S. Nearing its COVID Peak? Experts warn against letting guard down." In February 2021, Dr. Craig Spencer wrote in a Medium post that he was as eager as anyone to see the end of this pandemic. Thankfully, that may be in sight. Dr. Craig Spencer, Director of Global Health and Emergency Medicine at New York Presbyterian Columbia University Medical Center, wrote, "COVID centers and hospitalizations are dropping. Vaccines are getting into arms. So what happens next?" Next was, of course, more COVID-19. So almost a year later, while Dr. Craig Spencer is encouraged by the fact that the growth in the number of new COVID cases has slowed down in parts of the country, he has been humbled by earlier waves and is not ready to celebrate the beginning of the end of the pandemic. Dr. Spencer said, "It's not like you get to the top of Everest, have a small party and then start your ascent down and take off your oxygen mask," adding, "There is still risk when you start your descent, and I think it's important for all of us to continue to be wary and aware of that." While the United States has over the last month broken records for COVID hospitalizations and cases due to the highly contagious Omicron variant, the Northeast has seen a decrease in the number of daily new COVID cases, or a slowing down of the rate of increase, prompting predictions that the worst of the pandemic will soon be over. But infectious disease experts say that's premature because of how unpredictable the virus has been and the fact that it is still surging and overwhelming hospitals in parts of the country. Dr. Celine Gunder, an infectious disease specialist and epidemiologist at New York University, said, "Yes, particularly in places like New York City, Omicron is peaking, but I think we have to be very careful not to confuse peaking with a low." Dr. Celine Gunder added, "That means people who are going out and about, living their normal lives, need to be careful to still make use of mitigation measures like wearing higher quality face masks and doing as much outdoors as possible." According to data from the New York Times, in the Northeast, the number of daily new cases has started to decline in recent days, but other places continue to experience a spike in cases. For example, 10 states saw a more than 300% increase in cases over the last 2 weeks. Across the United States, there has been a 133% increase in cases and a 79% increase in COVID hospitalizations over that period. Justin Lessler, an epidemiology professor at the University of North Carolina, says, I think it's very possible that we may be at a peak, and certainly that would be in line with a lot of modeling results in terms of timing, which projected peaks in mid to late January. But at the same, until we see a few more days of consistent downward trends and start to see that reflected in hospitalizations as well, I would be cautious. Despite the slowing down of the surge, when Dr. Spencer worked a shift recently in the emergency room at Columbia in New York, he said, "It was just as chaotic for me as it was for my colleagues around the city." That's because the emergency room was filled with patients who were very sick with COVID, in addition to people coming for heart attacks, appendicitis, and other ailments. As compared to the start of the pandemic, when almost all the patients in emergency rooms were there because of COVID, Dr. Spencer said. There is also a significant number of providers who are unable to work because they tested positive for COVID. In Oklahoma, a 363% increase over the past 2 weeks has overwhelmed hospitals. According to K4TV, three hospital systems reported that they had no intensive care unit beds available. Dr. Dale Blatzler, the hospital's chief COVID officer, said at OU Health in Oklahoma City, "The spike in COVID cases poses a challenge for providers treating patients with the virus, but also for non-COVID patients because the hospital must take additional measures to protect them from the virus." He said there are also 250 staff members who are unable to work because they are isolating due to the virus. While Dr. Dale Blatzler hopes that the state could reach its Omicron peak in the next week, he is concerned that the decline could be slower than in other states because only 54% of the population is fully vaccinated, whereas in New York, officials claim the number is 73%. Dr. Dale Blatzler added, "I'm much more worried that we will have a substantial increase in hospitalizations over the next few weeks. We're already stretched in our systems, and since unvaccinated people are driving hospitalizations, I'm very worried about that." Still, Aaron Wendelboe, an OU epidemiologist, said that he is a bit encouraged by what is happening in other states, but like other epidemiologists, Aaron Wendelboe said he is not ready to declare that we won't see another surge like Omicron because the virus continues to mutate. He added, "I feel like I'm a slower learner because I would not have predicted this big of a surge so quickly, but COVID continues to surprise us." Department of Human and Health Services data shows in 18 states at least 85% of adult intensive care unit beds were in use, while in 24 states at least 80% of the staffed hospital beds were occupied. Alabama, Missouri, New Mexico, Rhode Island, Texas, and Wisconsin are among the states suffering a particular shortage of intensive care unit beds. Moreover, students across the United States have walked out of classes to protest inadequate anti-COVID health measures, demanding a return to remote learning amid the persisting surges of the Omicron variant across the nation. The walkouts come just 2 days after 340,000 students in the major Midwestern city of Chicago, Illinois, returned to the classroom following a 5-day work stoppage due to demands by the Chicago Teachers Union for tougher COVID-19 restrictions. A student group in the city known as Chicago Public Schools Radical Youth Alliance organized a walkout at various city schools on Friday afternoon, 14th of January, followed by a rally outside the district's headquarters. Protesting students in Chicago, home to America's third largest public school district, declared that they were dissatisfied with the additional health protocols that the CTU and city mayor Lori Lightfoot agreed to. Also, according to local press reports in the major northeastern city of Boston, nearly 600 students from 11 schools walked out of classes on Friday, 14th of January. The Boston Student Advisory Council, which called for the walkout, further posted a series of demands on Twitter, including 2 weeks of remote learning and improved COVID-19 testing for teachers and students. An online petition started by a Boston high school senior says schools are a COVID-19 breeding ground and demanding a remote option, and gathered more than 8,000 signatures as of Friday morning. The latest wave of infections has renewed the debate over whether to keep schools open, as officials seek to balance fears about the highly contagious Omicron variant with concerns that students could fall even further behind after 2 years of stop-and-start instruction. The result has been a patchwork of COVID-19 policies around the country that has left parents feeling exhausted and baffled. Just listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to RIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترك همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Martyr Soleimani will live on forever and his enemies will disappear in history's dustbin, January 5th, 2022.
هم زندگی این مرد سرتاپا برکت شد، هم شهادت او. ما در زیارت ائمه علیهم السلام عرض میکنیم که فقبضک الیه باختیاره و الزم عدوک الحجه.
Both the life and martyrdom of this man was imbued with blessings. When reading a ziyara, and sending your salams to the Imams, peace be upon them, we read, God seized your life at His will, and by doing so, He proved the propriety of your cause against the enemies. This means He took your life at this in the hands of God. But this seizure of life proved your cause against your enemies and the enemies of God. The same is true of this martyrdom. Well, lives are in the hands of God. Everyone leaves this life, and everyone does so in a different way. Shahid Soleimani too left this world, but the details of his martyrdom proved the legitimacy of his cause against the enemies and to all onlookers.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
خب حالا صدق اوم آهد الله علیه ینجاق یعنی با هدف با عهد الهی با آرمان ها برخورد صادقانه داشته باشه. مشکل ما اینه دیگه. ما در موارد زیادی مشکل ما اینجاست که پای صدق در حرکت ما و در تعامل ما با آرمان های اسلام و انقلاب میلنگه.
Well, what does "of the believers are men who are true to the covenant which they made with Allah" mean? It means being truthful in one's treatment of one's goals, one's covenant with God, and one's ideals. This is the problem we have. In many cases, our problem is that our feet tremble when it comes to being truthful in our moves and our treatment of the ideals of Islam and the revolution. But this man worked honestly throughout his life in the real sense of the word, as far as we saw and knew him in this life. This was true during the sacred defense, after that, and when he took on the responsibility of the Quds force. Working honestly means tolerating the tribulations of struggling on the path of ideals.
Allah, I wanna thank you. Things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.